Welcome to You've Gotta Taste This, the podcast where food people tell you about recipes that you've simply got to taste. I'm your host, Adam Roberts, and I've been writing about food for almost 20 years. I love to cook, and even more, I love to talk about cooking. So let's get started. My guest this week is Jen Harris, columnist for the LA Times and host of The Bucket List, where she travels all over and eats amazing things around LA, which is why I changed the format this week and asked Jen to send me somewhere. Here's the message she sent me.
Hey Adam, it's Jen Harris from the LA Times, and you've got to taste this. It's a Shenzhen bao from the Kangkang Food Court in the San Gabriel Valley. I know you're going to love it.
So this week's episode is all about my adventure on the road to the San Gabriel Valley to eat Shenzhen bao on Jen's recommendation. Here's this week's episode of You've Got to Taste This. All right, Jen. Well, thank you so much for coming on my podcast. I was so grateful to you because we kind of took things in a new direction this week. Normally, I ask people to send me a recipe, but because I'm such a fan of your writing for the LA Times, where you write all about places to go, I asked you to send me somewhere. And can you tell everybody where you sent me?
Yeah, so I sent you to Kangkang Food Court in the San Gabriel Valley, which is one of my favorite places for dumplings. I'm so excited that you went there, and I can't wait to hear what you thought.
Well, it was so interesting for me because I watched your video before I went, and you have a video on the LA Times website, and it's, correct my pronunciation if it's wrong, but is it Shenzhen bao? Is that how you say
Shenzhen bao? Yeah.
Shenzhen bao. And so I didn't quite know what to expect, like when you told me to get this dish, but when I saw it in the video, I was like, okay, so it's sort of like a bao, which is like sort of like a, would you say it's like a bun, like almost like a little tiny bun, but then it's also a dumpling, but it's a soup dumpling and it's fried on the bottom and steamed on the top. Is that correct?
Yeah. So it's basically all the dumplings in one, like the best of all the dumplings in one. So it's like part yeasted bun. They only let it proof kind of like up to a certain point. And then it's like part pot sticker, like pan fried dumpling. And then yes, the filling is like juicy pork and hot flavorful soup. Yes. And so you get all the different textures in this one dumpling.
Well, it's so funny because it's like, it really makes you think about like when you read about something or you see something like in an image, like that you think you know what it's going to be like, but then you really, when you go and taste it, it could even be more profound. And that's how it was for me. I was like, oh, I think I get what that is. But when I went there and I had it, it was like the dreamiest like combination of textures. It was like crispy, but juicy. And like, and it had this vinegar that you dipped it in. I do have to say that I embarrassed myself in every possible way you can with like a dumpling, like, cause it's a little heavy with my chopsticks. Like I lifted it up and I plopped it. It fell out of my chopsticks into the sauce and splashed all over me. And then I bit into it and squirted all over my glasses.
You had the dumpling squirt.
Yeah. Okay. I had a squirt, but it was so worth it. And it felt like such a cool, like in the know place. Like I felt like it wasn't like overrun with like tourists or anything. It was just like a bunch of locals. And so how did you first discover Kangkang Food Court?
You know, I think my grandma took me there a really long time ago, like over 10 years ago, specifically to get that dumpling. And then I tried it once and I just remember thinking like, that's it. Like, this is the best dumpling in the universe. Like, I don't need to ever eat any other ones ever again.
Right.
And I was just hooked. And then I started bringing my friends there. And I take people on dumpling crawls around the SGV, and that's always a stop. But it's always the last stop because I love all dumplings and there's so many different varieties and I appreciate all of them, but I feel like you have to end with this one because it's just so phenomenal. And kind of pulls from all the different like textures and styles that we kind of just had throughout the day. So, that is always on the Jen Harris dumpling crawl.
did you grow up in LA? I don't think I know where you grew up.
Yes. Yes. I grew up in Pasadena actually. And so Pasadena and Alhambra. So yes, I am an LA girl. I was born at Cedar Sinai.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Very LA. Yeah.
So you've had your fair share of dumplings in LA because you're from here. So in terms of the San Gabriel Valley, like, and for people who don't know, the San Gabriel Valley is about like 20, 30 minutes, would you say, like outside of LA, east of LA? Is that right?
On a good traffic day. Yes.
Yeah. On a good traffic day. And it's predominantly a Chinese community, would you say? I mean, is it?
Yeah, I think you can find food from all over. I mean, you can find Taiwanese food, right. You can find Hong Kong style cafes, Sichuan food, you know, all the different provinces of China, but also Vietnamese and Japanese and Korean. So it's just like this mecca of Asian food from around the entire world. And we're so, so lucky to have it.
Well, I sometimes feel overwhelmed by it, which is why I was so grateful that you sent me here, because like I've been to Chengdu Taste, which has amazing Sichuan food, and I've been to a couple of places, but just in terms of the sprawl of it, I also kind of feel the same way about Koreatown in LA. Like it's just such a bastion of riches that it's just, I don't even know where to begin. So it's so nice to have someone send you specifically to a spot. But so in terms of when you went there the first time, so you knew right away you loved it, but then you wrote about it for the LA Times, you made this video. Was that the first time that you like met the owner and really learned how they made the dumplings themselves?
Yes, that was the first time. So I have a series for the LA Times called The Bucket List. The first season was all about fried chicken. This season is all about dumplings. And I knew that I definitely wanted to devote an entire episode to that specific style of dumpling because it's so special and difficult to make. And all my years going to Kang Kang, I didn't know who owned it. They would never let you look inside the kitchen, you know, for this episode, I was like, if I'm going to focus on that dumpling, like this is the one place I want to highlight, you know, this is like the gold standard. So I reached out to them via Instagram, actually, and because I noticed they had an Instagram account and that they had posted recently. So I was like, all right, this is a good sign, like I'm gonna cross my fingers. And I reached out to them and the daughter of the owner responded. And she was like, let me talk to my dad. And I was like, all right, hopefully. She's like, because we don't normally do anything like that, especially allow people in the kitchen.
Right.
And so she talked to him and she came back and said, yes, that for the first time, they were going to let anyone in the kitchen to kind of get a look at what they were doing. So we were the first one. So that LA Times video is like the first look into how they make them. And they're, I mean, still the recipe is very secret and most of the technique is secret, but we do get a peek inside behind the magic for sure.
And he seemed kind of tickled that you were interviewing him. Like he seemed very proud of his place and the dumplings. And in terms of like what does go into it, like I thought it was so interesting. It's like a soup dumpling, if you were going to make one at home, is basically like gelatinized or like, it's like chicken stock or whatever stock you're using that's become like a gelatin because it's been reduced so much or it's been refrigerated. And then you chop up that gelatin and like stir it into the pork mixture. And then when it gets steamed, like that gelatin melts back into soup. Is that sort of how it worked in that recipe?
Yes, for that specific one, yes. But we actually did a whole episode on Shaolongbao on soup dumplings and saw that there's like multiple techniques for how to get the soup in the dumpling.
Okay.
So whether that's like freezing it, like freezing the filling one of the most common techniques is making like a stock and then like turning it into jelly, because there's so much collagen in it, and then kind of like cutting that into the filling and then letting it melt when it cooks.
Now on that same episode you had was she like a TikTok star or like a Instagrammer who also made Shengjian Bao? Like she showed you how to do it?
Yes, Brittany. Yeah. So she the Bao Bay. Brittany is so fantastic. I found her on social media. She has a huge following on Instagram and TikTok. And she started these dumpling classes like during the pandemic and is still, you know, doing pop-ups now. You can buy her dumplings or sign up for one of her classes. And this is one of her like signature dumplings is that she's tried to perfect this one since this is something that she grew up eating with her family in Shanghai, moved to Hawaii, and then, you know, would go back and forth to kind of learn from her grandparents and then started teaching people how to do it. And hers are really good.
Really good. Did she have like, opinions about the ones at Kang Kang? Like, was she like secretly whispering to you, like, you know, they're doing this wrong or was everyone on good behavior?
No, she was very impressed with theirs. She thought theirs was like some of the best ones she's tried. Yeah, she was a fan too.
So can you tell us a little bit? I mean, I follow you, so I'm a fan of yours, but I actually don't know a lot about like your background, getting into journalism, getting into food journalism, and having the job you have now. So how did all of this come about?
Thank you for following my stuff. First of all, for reading my stuff, I appreciate it. A long, I mean. I, like most people, I've always been into food, but and you know, I like to eat, but I feel like both sides of my family, my mom's side is the Chinese side, my dad's side is the Jewish side,
Oh,
both
I didn't know you
Koreans.
were half Jewish. Wow. That's why I feel so connected to you. Okay,
Oh,
makes sense.
good, good. Yes, we're both Jewish. But yeah, I mean, both grandmas are just such great cooks and really made an effort to cook a lot whenever my sister and I or the family were over. And so when we spent time together, we were in the kitchen, we were eating. They made a lot of family recipes and they still do, which is really great.
Did they do
And they
that
both
with each
also,
other? Like, do they know each other?
they know each other,
Separately.
but it was mostly, yeah, separately. Just whenever my sister and I would go to each, you know, grandma's house. And then my Chinese grandma especially, well, both grandmas love also going out to eat and like trying new restaurants and different types of food. So my Chinese grandma and her friends are always going around the SGV trying new places. They're so funny. They just grab takeout menus. And so when I go to my grandma's house, she's like, my friend said to go here. And then it's highlighted with what to order, which
Oh,
is
I
like
love
phenomenal.
that. That's so lucky. I wish I had a grandma that did that. That's so cool.
So she, you know, and even my parents too, like on the weekends, they'd be like, let's go try this new Ethiopian restaurant or let's go try that, you know. So food was just like something that always brought me joy and was a way to get to know people and learn about people. When I was getting into journalism, like in college, I went to UC Irvine for undergrad. And so while I was there, I started working for like the university newspaper and started writing about food because in Irvine, there's actually a ton of great Asian food around the campus as well, like up and down Culver Boulevard, and great Iranian food too. So most of the money I spent in college was, my parents were pissed because they paid for like the dining hall. And so I had free food, but I was spending all my money on, I was like, oh, there's new Persian place open. I really want to try it.
Well, that was your real
So
education. That you paid, it paid
exactly.
for itself, so that was okay.
Yeah,
That's so funny.
so just running around getting food, and then I ended up at USC for grad school, and we had launched a new digital publication there at the time called Neon Tommy, and I was writing, you know, some food and restaurant stuff for them. I was working for this company called Cool Hunt, which was it was like an agency where people hired us from out of the country to write about LA restaurants and like hospitality. So like I have bylines in like Vogue Taiwan or Cosmopolitan Hong Kong, like writing about new restaurants in LA or like a new hotel. And then after grad school, I got a job at the Times, but it wasn't in the food section actually. It was doing web stuff for Book Review and fashion, which both things I love, but I always wanted to be in the food section, just because I loved food so much and I was a huge fan of the section. The editor was Russ Parsons at the time, and Betty Halleck, who is back, and I'm so excited. She's our deputy editor again, but she was there at the time too, and I was such a huge fan of hers and so excited. So that, you know, when a position came up in food, like a year after I started at the Times, I took it. So I've been in the food section ever since. Long time now, like 30 years ago.
And you and you have a good job because it's like you don't have to. I mean, I feel like the after the pandemic, it feels like food writers and food critics are not really writing negative things anymore about restaurants. I mean, there used to be the day like where like food critics would like sharpen their teeth and like write their takedowns of like, you know, the hot new restaurant. But it feels like now, especially the LA Times, feels more like a celebration of the best that LA has to offer. And so, I mean, did you ever? Have you written like negative reviews of anything in the LA Times? No.
Yeah, so I've never been a critic.
All
I
right.
don't really have any desire to be a critic, because I mean, more power, like Bill Addison, who's our critic right now, is so phenomenal and I love his stuff and I was a huge fan of his before he came to work with us. But like I like there's so many great restaurants and so many people doing amazing things that I love that as a columnist I can just highlight that. Like there's plenty. I can't even get to it all. You know, and no one goes into the restaurant business intending to do something bad. So, you know, I'd rather, there's so much great stuff to highlight that I'd rather just do that. But I do think that restaurant criticism is important. And I think that Bill does it extremely well. But I do think there's kind of this like feeling of like celebration and appreciation, and that the format has changed into, you know, more of like, we're telling you a story about this restaurant and who's behind it versus just, is this good or bad? Which, and yeah. I really appreciate that. So,
and do you get pitched all the time? Like, are people trying to get you to write about their places, or is it mostly just like whatever you feel like writing about, you write about?
It is whatever I feel like writing about, I write about, but I do get hit up on social media a lot. Email too, but social media a lot, with people being like, please come in. You know, they're all offering free things, which we can't take. We don't take any comp meals. We pay for everything. We don't do any sort of like social media collabs or anything like that. But I do get, and I know my colleagues do too, hit up a lot on social media saying, please come in, we'll give you a free dish, which we can't do.
But. Yeah, of course. But I'm curious, so if, having lived here basically your whole life and writing about food, I'm curious, like, how do you feel like LA has changed as a food city? Because I mean, I would say right now in the country, it feels as hot and as vital and important as any other city in the country right now. But did it always feel that way? Or do you feel like it's just getting the recognition that it has always deserved?
So I have always felt that way, just because, I don't know. Again, I had like parents and family who really valued going out to try different types of food and like driving for good food. Mm-hmm. So I've always known that we have the best tacos. I've always known that our San Gabriel Valley is like insane. Yeah. I've always known that our K-Town has incredible food. And that chefs here, and chefs have been coming here to do, and not just chefs, but like creative people have been coming here to do amazing things for that, you know, should be recognized for years, but only recently, maybe within like the last 5 to 7 years, has LA been kind of getting the recognition that I think it's always deserved. Mm-hmm. But I do always feel, I have always felt that this has been like the best place to eat for a very long time. And it's only getting better.
Well, it's so funny because I lived in New York for so many years and then I came here, and the New York food media culture feels so different to me than LA food media culture. Like, I feel like when I was in New York, there were so many publications and just so many like magazines and blogs and, you know, newspaper sections. It was just like, it was such like a gestalt of people and personalities and places to go. And in LA, when I first moved here, it was really Jonathan Gold. Like, it felt like he was like the king of LA in a way. And also Evan Kleinman, like those were the two like figures, large figures. Now I feel like it's shifting a little bit, but I feel like a major difference though is like the LA Times does feel, especially because LA Weekly is really not as mm-hmm. much of a thing anymore. It does feel like the LA Times is so the main like media outlet for coverage of LA, right? I mean, in terms of food.
Good,
in LA.
Yes, we are.
yeah, but it does feel
I'm
very
glad
central.
You think that.
Yeah, but I wonder like if the reason New York often gets celebrated more as a food city, it's just because there's so much more of media there. There's so much more media to write about it. Or no, what do you think?
That's an interesting take on it. I mean, maybe. I mean, I do also think I love New York. I think New York is a great place to eat. Do I think it's better than LA or has more to offer? No, I don't. Right. I've never felt that. I appreciate both cities for different reasons, and it's mm-hmm. also really great. But I think you're onto something. Maybe it is that there is just more food media. I also feel like sometimes New York just kind of has this mentality that like it is the only place that exists and everything exists around it.
Yeah, of course.
And that's, you know, so sometimes I think that's a little part of it too. I think you're onto something. Maybe.
Well, also I feel like the climate has shifted a lot away from fine dining. I mean, even now with this like Noma closing news, like I feel like New York, when I would describe the difference between New York and LA, I'd be like, well, LA, New York has its like bastions of fine dining. Like it has like John George and Daniel mm-hmm. and like Per Se or whatever. And I don't feel like LA, as much as we do have like Providence and some other places, it's like that's not what makes LA great. And I feel like as more people are getting critical of the culture of fine dining mm-hmm. and what it takes, it's like the LA's like vast diversity and you know, family run businesses are becoming much more of like what people are interested in now too. I think
that's I'd have to agree with you. I feel like LA has not always been a place for fine dining. And I do think there's kind of like a shift in the types of places that people value now and think are interesting, and that it's not just fine dining. You know, I've never been a fine dining person. I love Providence, and I think it's great. Or like Cato is great too. But I'm just not like a big tasting menu person. So that's just not how I particularly like to eat all the time. And I can't afford it either. And I don't know a lot of people who can, you know, so I definitely think there's been this shift in, you know, what's exciting. And what's exciting is no longer a, you know, tasting menu that costs $500. And it can be, but I feel like the majority of people are looking to other styles of food and styles of dining. And I mean, in LA, we have so many tasting menus that just aren't fine dining. You know, we have so many chefs who are doing incredibly creative, thoughtful, innovative cuisine without the crazy price tag and without, you know, just the traditional fine dining atmosphere that you think of when you think of fine dining. So, I mean, like Anna Jack Thai, for instance, and that tasting menu in the alley is phenomenal. Needle in Silver Lake was doing an incredible tasting menu, like outside on the sidewalk for a while.
I missed it, but I used to drive past it. Yeah, it looked really cool.
Hopefully they bring it back. You know, Kin is a restaurant in Koreatown. I believe they're doing like a modern take on the Korean food that the chef grew up with. And I believe it's still under $100.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah, which is insane. So, I mean, $100 is still $100. It's expensive, but to have something like that for under $100 is a lot more reasonable and affordable than some other places for sure.
Now, I follow your Instagram. And if you guys aren't following Jen Harris on Instagram, you guys are missing out. Is it just Jen Harris, just so people can follow you?
So it's Jen with two N's underscore Harris underscore, because there is a very lovely Broadway actress who has my same name, and she took at Jen Harris. So you got to add the underscores.
Okay. I love Broadway. So maybe I'll follow her too. But I was going to say, like, if you follow Jen's Instagram, she does these like roundups of like your week of eating. And they are, I mean, talk about like inspirational food porn. I mean, you like in one roundup, you'll have like covered more of LA than I will have like in a year. But it's like, is that a typical week for you? Is like eating like, you know, like going to Guisado's and then going to like some food truck and then going to a sushi? Like, it just feels like you're covering so much ground. Is that typical?
Good. I'm glad you think that. I'm really, because, you know, I love finding good food wherever it is and in any form. So I love when I learn about, you know, a new taco truck, or maybe it's an Argentinian place that's been there for 30 years and I just haven't been in, you know, in the valley, or you know, I just love going out, trying new places, and not just where I live. I love when someone tells me about a restaurant that's 45 minutes away. Like, it's okay. To me, it's like an adventure to get there.
Yes.
I have a Prius and I have so many miles on that thing, and it is dirty and it needs a car wash. And it usually smells like food, but I'm constantly in my car going out, trying to find good food and share it with people so that hopefully, you know, other people can enjoy it as well. So it syncs up my Instagram post syncs up with a weekly column for the paper that comes out every Monday online. And for that, like, I love doing that because I love getting to meet the people behind these places that I just found that are so amazing and talk to them about their stories and why they make what they make. And just learn about them and learn about their lives and more about their food and how they do it. So it's been super fun.
What are you eating when you're not eating delicious LA food? Like, if you're just home, like, do you cook at all, or is it mostly just like takeout, or what?
I don't get to cook as much as I'd like, because I am eating out so much. So a lot of the times when I'm cooking at home, it's repurposing leftovers from the takeout I just got for work, because I don't want to waste food. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of fried rice.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
I've put everything from the insides of a leftover, you know, number 19 from Langer's.
I knew you were gonna say that. For some reason, I was like, Langer's fried rice would be so good.
Yes, like Langer's fried rice is very good. And then some of the others, I've just put so many weird things into fried rice. Yeah, so I eat a lot, or like wrapped up into a burrito or just something, you know, so I can repurpose it. And I use a lot of chili crisp. Like my fridge is full of chili crisp because I just put it on everything.
Well, the Langer's fried rice is making me think of your Jewish background and your Chinese background, because it's like those two cuisines. I mean, famously, like Jewish people eat Chinese food at Christmas. So, like, is there a lot of crossover, like, in terms of like what your Jewish grandmother likes to eat and what your Chinese grandmother likes to eat in terms of like flavors and like interests, or
Yeah, it's
no?
funny because yes, my Jewish grandma Phyllis Harris, shout out to Phyllis. She
Great
loves
name.
Chinese food. Like, yeah, she is great. She loves. So I was actually just with her in Palm Desert where she lives, and trying to find her an Asian market because they don't have a 99 Ranch there, which is like terrible. So I found this like little Filipino market, and we went and we stocked her up on, you know, fish sauce, soy sauce, rice noodles. Like they had a bunch of just like staples that she likes to have in the house. But her favorite thing to eat is shumai. Like she loves shumai. She loves dim sum. She loves shumai. So whenever I go out there, I usually stop at Lunasia on the way, or a couple, you know, because they have like the really big shumai, and I'll stop at a couple of her favorites and with a cooler, and then bring her a bunch of shumai so that she can freeze it and kind of like defrost it as the week goes. Because she just loves Asian food of all kinds. But my Chinese grandma loves Chinese food and meatball sandwiches. I don't know why. I don't know where the meatball, you know, she's like, I'm going, she loves Claro's Deli. Like she loves for me to go to Claro's, get her one of those giant meatball subs with cheese with extra sauce. And she loves to eat that. So if she's not eating Chinese food.
Now, do you think you could? I was just thinking about this. Like, do you think you could make a matzo ball soup dumpling?
Well, yes, I already think that matzo balls are dumplings, just without wrappers. So, but you, yeah, like kind of like the flavors of, yeah, I feel like if you use a wonton wrapper and you kind of, there'd have to be lots of schmaltz in it. Like you could do like a ground chicken, lots of schmaltz, some dill, and maybe a little bit of matzo meal in there and some egg to kind of bind it together. And maybe a little minced carrot too, an
This
onion and celery. I think that would be really good.
is a $1 million idea. I mean, like matzo ball
Right?
soup dumplings. I mean, I think
Yes.
you have lines around the block. I hope nobody's listening to
Yeah.
this, because they're gonna
I
steal
know.
this.
Don't tell anyone. And then like and do a little like crispy chicken skin on top, like
Or like
just like
fried
a
onions, maybe.
yes, fried. Yes, that would be really good. Oh, let's get together and make that. You
I
want
would
to?
love to.
Okay,
Yeah, that
let's
would be so
try.
fun. I also think it'd be interesting to try to do like borscht soup dumplings, but that might get a little
Oh yeah.
messy.
Ooh, I mean, I'll bring an apron. That sounds great.
This does sound like a food truck that's waiting to happen. We just need a clever name for it.
Okay.
So what are I just have to since your show is called The Bucket List, and you did fried chicken and now you're doing dumplings, but just in terms of the big picture of the LA bucket list, like what are your places if somebody's coming to LA? I know
Ooh.
it's a hard question, but it sort of feels like you're the one to ask. So what are the places that people must go if they only have like a week in LA or 5 days in LA or
That
maybe
is
an overnight?
so hard. That is so hard. There are certain places like Jit Ladah where it's like I take people there, or you know, heavily encourage people to go there to try Jazz's Thai food because I think it's so phenomenal. But not just the food, just like the atmosphere and the ambiance and like the hospitality you get when you go there is just such a special dining experience. And it's in the middle of Thai Town. Like I just feel like that's such a special place that I always take people to. Kang Kang's on there too. Like so I usually
Yeah,
take
it
people on a
should be.
dumpling crawl. Yeah. So I'll take people on a dumpling crawl. So it's like Kang Kang, also Hoi To Sheng, which does those like blintz looking dumplings. They do pork or beef. They're in the SGV as well. They also opened a location in Hollywood, which is really delicious. Yeah, so and convenient that they're there too. Long Xingji, which is also in the SGV in a shopping center, in a giant shopping center where honestly I could just eat in that shopping center for the rest of my life and not have to go anywhere. But they do the giant pork and crab buns where you stick the straw in and like you suck up all the amazing filling and juice inside. And so you usually like those are on the dumpling crawl, and I take people to go to those as well. Tacos, there's, I mean, I always tell people to eat, to, you know, get tacos here. I'm trying to think, like, I mean, El Russo and Sonora Town are incredible.
Yes.
I usually take people to one of, but also like Gusado's. I know there's a bunch of locations now, but like still my favorite tortilla,
yes,
like corn tortillas, like in life.
They're really good. And they do that little sampler. So if you were to go to Gusado's, like you can just get a sampler of tacos and they just put a bunch of different, yes, ones on a plate, which I really like.
Yes. And I usually take people to K-Town. I mean, it'll depend on like, do you want hand cut noodles? Do you want barbecue or mandu? You know, so I'll usually take people to some place in K-Town depending on what they feel like, because I just feel like our Koreatown is so special, and we have everything there. I'm trying to think if there's other like specific. This is the hardest question anyone asks.
You're doing great. Now you're answering in a way that's like really helpful, because it's like, oh, don't know all these places, so I would be happy to go to them. But I guess I'm curious too, in terms of like the middle of the road, like not fine dining, but not like a truck. Like what about like the like Mozza's and like Jelena's and like those kind of places where, you know, like Nancy Silverton or just like kind of these LA personalities? Like, is that the kind of food too that you're interested in, or is it still mostly?
No, I think like I love Osteria and Pizzeria Mozza, and her steakhouse, The Bearish, is also excellent. Nancy Silverton, I was just talking to a friend about this the other day who had just recently eaten at Mozza again for like the first time, and Kispaka. I think that she is such an excellent chef, and her food is consistently delicious at all the restaurants. I think like the Mozzaplex, as Jonathan used to call it, is definitely high up there. But also like Republique is.
Oh yeah, I just went there. It's
solid
so
restaurant.
Good. Yeah, I went there for breakfast too, and it was like, oh my god, it's like $22 for like a croque madame, but it was worth every penny. It was so delicious, and it's like every detail. And even just the little salad that was like on the side of it was like the most beautiful lettuce. It's like an embarrassment of riches, that place. I mean, I was there when it was Campanile like 20 years ago, because I was living in LA for the summer, and that's when Nancy Silverton and Mark Peel, for those who don't know, I mean, this building was Charlie Chaplin's old studio, I think. It's like a historic LA building.
Yes.
And then there was Campanile, which was like a really huge restaurant. And then was it something before Republique, or did it just become Republique right after that?
I think it became Republique after, because I had my 21st birthday, my parents threw my dad and I it was my 21st, his 50th, like surprise brunch at Campanile. And then I think shortly after it turned into Republique. So if there was something in between, I don't remember it, but it's such a special dining room too.
It is. Yeah. And the food, and they have like the most incredible house-made baguette there. And then like, you can get it with Normandy butter, but they also have pan drippings you can get it with, like meat drippings. Ugh, it's incredible. So I'm curious, I'm going to pivot now. Feels like being a young food journalist in 2023. I mean, you are. It's so funny, actually. This is because we're having this conversation visually over Zoom, and I had a call with my husband this morning with a money person, because we were we were talking about, she kept saying how young we looked, and at some point I was like, I have a filter on, like I forgot that I had this really gauzy filter on, and Craig, my husband, was like, turn off the filter, and then we like aged by like 30 years.
Stop
anyway, but I was gonna say, as a young food journalist in 2023, where do you see the future? I mean, because like, if even when you have meetings now at the LA Times, it feels like writing at a typewriter and typing about food is like, has gone the way of the dodo. It's like, now we're like doing TikTok, now we're doing Instagram. Now, I mean, where's the energy now in terms of coverage and trying to cover food, you know, in LA? Like, where do you see yourself in like 5 years, 10 years, like putting all of your effort?
I'm obviously going to be a big time TikTok star. No, I'm just kidding. but I just feel like that people consume media in so many different ways now, like, you know, and a lot of people do get their news or ideas for where to eat via social media now, whether that's TikTok or Instagram, or there's probably many apps I don't know about, because I thank you for saying I'm young, but maybe I am too old to know about them. So, you know, I think we're constantly trying, or at least I am constantly trying to evolve and adapt. You know, like the LA Times food is on TikTok and we're trying some fun stuff there. But I just feel like at the heart of what food writing is, you know, it's still like telling a story through food. And so I feel like that will always hopefully be at the heart of whatever I'm doing. The medium just might change. So, you know, like, and yes, like we started doing video series, which is really great. And, you know, we are on TikTok, we've been on Instagram for a while. But yeah, I don't know, I guess, what that future is going to look like. Probably more, you know, probably more video. Just, I feel like people, you know, food has always been visual and people want to, see what you're doing and feel like they're sitting at the table with you. And you can do that through writing, you know, really well, but I think, you know, sometimes video is just the best way to do that. So I definitely think there'll be more video involved and having even more of a presence on social media, but I'm excited to see what that's going to look like too.
Well, it's funny because I feel like so many people who become writers and like want to be writers, it's because they don't want to be like the center of attention and they don't want to be on camera. But now it feels like almost a prerequisite to become a food writer. Now I feel like you do sort of have to have some kind of presence online. I mean, unless you're one of the very rare creatures who can break through with just the words that you put on a page, which there are certainly like people who still can do that. But it's like, you know, now I think you have to put yourself out there in as many ways as you can. So that's why we're doing this podcast right now.
Yes, there you go.
So in terms of your influences, like who were some of the writers that you read when you were getting interested in food? Like, did you have a favorite food writer, or were you more interested in other forms of journalism and then just gravitated towards food?
I mean, I was such a fan of Jonathan Gold, you know, before I got to work with him. So, and then when he came to the Times, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like just at my desk right now. So just like, you know, it was really, so I was always a fan of his, you know, MFK Fisher. I was reading Bill Addison long before I started working with him. I always thought he was phenomenal. Ligaia Michon from the New York Times, have worshipped forever. I was also reading Helen Rosner. I still do. I read a lot of food writing before I kind of went that route officially. Those were some of the people and Betty Hallett too, and the rest of the LA food team who was there before me, I was a big fan of too. So,
well, for those who don't know, I mean, Jonathan Gold, like, I guess there's people listening who might not know that much about him, but he is the only Pulitzer Prize winning food critic, right? Or food writer in the history of the Pulitzers. And I I spent a summer in LA when I accidentally went to law school and
accidentally.
In some crazy turn of events, I became an intern. So I had a summer internship at Girardi and Keys, which if you've watched The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, you'll know that Erica Jane, one of the housewives, was married to Tom Girardi, who has now been exposed as having like run like a horrible like Ponzi scheme thing. So I worked there and it was a crazy summer. But I bought Jonathan Gold's book, Counterintelligence. And the highlight of that whole summer was that she has it right in front of her. That's so
funny.
It's on
my coffee table. Yes.
It's on the coffee table. Well, I used to like literally like open it up. And that summer was so fun because I would just go to some like random hot dog cart, like in the middle of nowhere and like eat a chili dog, you know? But I have to ask, since I'm such a fan of his, like, what are some of your memories of working with him and meeting him in real life?
So, I loved reading his stuff every week, but I just liked seeing him around the office and talking to him at my desk. My favorite thing was when he would just come by my desk and ask if I'd eaten somewhere that he'd eaten at before, or what I thought of this place. And just getting to talk to him was great. But my favorite memory was, he, he wanted to have dinner with my Chinese grandma because he's always hearing about how we're going around the San Gabriel Valley, and he ate around the San Gabriel Valley as much as she does. So he knew everything. And so he said he wanted to meet her and eat with her. So I said, okay. So I told my grandma and she was like, sure. Okay. So we meet for dinner at a restaurant. Trying to remember, it was one that he ended up reviewing, and we sit down and, you know, he asks her what she wants to order, and she's, you know, trying to be polite. So she says, no, you order. He's like, no, you're here. Like, you order. So they both order a couple of things. And then she tells me that she's impressed with what he ordered. And I was like, oh, that's good. But then, so as she's getting more comfortable with him, you know, she's starting to say things like, Jonathan, you know who has the best coffee? Do you know? And he's like, I don't know. Like, who? And she's like, McDonald's. I know you will never say it. I'm like, do you know who you're? She's just sitting there trying. And anyway, it was just,
I bet he loved that.
Oh my! It was so funny, but I was laughing the entire time. And we got through dinner, and it was really fun. And they're talking, and then the next day at work, he comes on my desk. And I'm like, oh god, is he going to mention the McDonald's? And yeah. And he just was like, that was really fun. I'd like to do that again. Like, just so gracious and kind. Anyway, one of my most fun memories was getting to eat with him and my grandma at the same table.
I love that. That's such a good story. I'm curious, like, because you do the same thing, like, and I always wondered this about Jonathan Gold, like, how did he and how do you hear about new places to go? Like, what are your sources? And like, are you like looking on forums on the internet? Are you, do you have like a whisper network of people that, like, you know, you secretly are texting? Like, how does it all work?
I have a secret network. No, it's a variety of things. For certain areas, my grandma is honestly the best resource with it's her network of friends who are constantly eating out and grabbing those to-go menus for me. But also, I mean, on social media sometimes too, I'll find you know, certain people who are really into food who I follow that just went to try a new place, and I'll message them and ask them how it was, or ask them if they've been eating anything cool lately. I drive around a lot. So a lot of times I'll just like see a spot and stop and then kind of investigate.
Really? I've never done that. Like, that's the thing that I've never done. Cause I'm always like, I feel like I've always been like, oh, I'm Jonathan Gold and all those people like must at some point just think that looks interesting. I'm going to go in there. Like, and I guess that's like, I think of my meals as being so important that like the idea of risking a bad meal is, terrifying to me. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's like to go.
No, it doesn't. And it's expensive. Eating out is expensive.
Yeah.
You know, and so yeah, having a bad meal, you're that's your time, that's your money. Like I totally get not wanting to risk that. And then if I stop somewhere, especially if I'm not familiar with the neighborhood, I'll like ask someone at a store, like, where do you eat around here? Like I'm constantly talking to strangers, constantly asking people I don't know about food.
Actually, that happened to me yesterday. I was taking an Uber or a Lyft, and the driver was Armenian, and this never happens to me, but he was talking to me about, I'm just looking at my phone because I wrote it down, the Lamajun at Taron Bakery.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever heard of that?
Try it and let me know about it.
He said they were unbelievable. Like, he just started telling me about it. Yeah. But yeah, that doesn't often happen, but I feel like I'm just like a trend follower. Like, unfortunately, like if I read, like, everybody's going to this place now, then I'll go there, as opposed to being the one that like goes first and then starts the trend.
Both are fine. As long as you're eating good food and finding something that brings you joy, that you enjoy eating, like, you don't need to be just eat the good thing. That's okay. But for new restaurants, definitely my colleague Stephanie, who writes our news column, Quick Bites, she's on top of stuff. So a lot of times there'll be like crossover between our columns where it's like, you know, I'll find a place and I'll be like, hey, have you? And she's like, it just went up. Like, she's like, I just wrote about it. So if you want to know about new restaurants, definitely follow Stephanie in her news column too, for sure.
So now when you have like a weekend ahead, as we do, and you're planning your Friday night out or your Saturday night out with friends or whatever, I'm just so curious because now I know so much about like how you eat and how you think about food. Like, what is like a typical like Friday night out with Jen Harris? Like, where would you start? Is there a bar involved? Is it a crawl? Is it just all at one place?
So I don't have like a typical anything, just because it really just depends on like how many restaurants did I hit this week that I wanted to try for the column, or like, you know, is there a friend in town or whatever? But I usually try to hit more than one spot, especially if it's like, and if it's a Friday and I don't have to wake up super early the next day, like there will most likely be a bar involved.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, it could be, and I try, like, especially when I'm trying a new restaurant, I'll just kind of look around that area, and see if there's anything else new or anything else there that I've been wanting to try, and kind of like group them together and be like, okay, like if anyone wants to meet here for a drink for an hour before and then hit dinner, or there's also this really cool dessert place I've been wanting to try around the corner. Mm-hmm. So if anyone still has room, maybe we can go there after. I'm usually the one planning because I'm trying to hit multiple things. And I'm a Virgo. So I think that makes sense when I don't follow astrological signs, but many people tell me that that makes sense about me, mm-hmm. because of that. So yes, I'm the one planning, and there's definitely an itinerary for my Friday evening, but even if it's Tuesday, there's an itinerary.
So, I love that. I mean, it's funny, 'cause like my husband doesn't have as much patience for like bopping around. Like he likes atmosphere. He's all about atmosphere. And his like number one pet peeve is like a TV in a restaurant. He hates like if there's TVs playing in a restaurant. So when I went to Pizza Palace, which is like one of the more exciting restaurants that opened in LA, I went with some friends and I was like, I can't bring Craig here. Like he would hate this, because it's like the food was amazing, but it's like there's TVs all over the walls. It's like a sports bar.
That's their shtick. It's a sport. So even if it's like supposed to be a sports bar, but just with amazing food, he's not
He's all about atmosphere. He'd rather go to like a restaurant with great atmosphere and mediocre food than go to a restaurant with like bad atmosphere and great food. And I'm the opposite. So that's kind of the funny thing. But yeah, we tend to like pick a restaurant and just go there for dinner. And then that's our night out, unless we go to like a bar mm-hmm. afterwards. But I do really love the whole like making a whole evening of it. That feels like a good plan. I saw on your Instagram you went to this new bar that was like a disco in LA.
Yes, Let's Go Disco. In downtown LA, in the Arts District, or like, yes, it's I think that's technically the Arts District. And I think it's attached to that Italian place that has the square pies, De La Nona, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's what it's called. And really, really great cocktails, fun atmosphere. I went close to when they opened because I heard that it could get kind of crowded later on in the evening, and there's like they like run a line outside, and I'm not about that line. They card you, you get like, this was the first time anyone has put any sort of like wristband on me for a while, which I was like, oh, I'm so excited. Right. And I got dressed up, and you walk in, and there's a disco ball, and just fun drinks. They have like three, I think it was like three variations on the Negroni, which is my favorite cocktail.
Oh yeah, mine too.
It was just a fun place. But I think if you're not into the line situation, definitely go between 5 and 7 p.m. 5:30 and 7 p.m.
It's so
go
funny.
Before dinner.
Do you feel like, back to the conversation about like TikTok and stuff, like do you feel like when I was in New York, I went to Lafayette and mm-hmm. like wherever that is, Nolita, and I think it's Nolita, I don't even know where it is, but NoHo, like north of Houston. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I was with my friends and we were eating like breakfast, and there was this line wrapped around the block, and I was like, what is this line? Because it wasn't to get into the breakfast. And it turns out like Lafayette has started making these like cronut-y things, like these like croissant-y like mm-hmm. donuts, but they had like fruit in them. Whatever it was had gone viral on TikTok. And mm-hmm. that line was like all the people who wanted to get their like picture with it, or make a Instagram with it. And I was just like, what is this? How come I haven't heard of this? And it's like, do you feel like the LA has the equivalent of that? Like the things that people are lining up for and hearing about through other means, or do you feel like it's still basically the same places?
I think that line was more to do with like, you know, when you go to a club and they're like at capacity but yes, I do think people will line up for a cocktail, but not usually. I think that the lines we see here, like Helen Ray's, like there will consistently yes. be a line wrapped around the block for Helen Ray's, now both locations, even in Pasadena too. because that is some good fried chicken. And people like fried chicken and they like spicy food. And Johnny and Amanda make phenomenal fried chicken. So, and now that they're doing waffles on the weekends again, like that line's even longer. So if in LA, I feel like it's food and sneakers is where I see a line. Like on Fairfax, all the sneaker places, always a consistent line. But I'm trying to think, like, speaking of the Corona, when Dominique Ancel had his bakery at the Grove, it was funny because there was not always a line,
No,
which
not at
to me
all.
was
It was
insane.
empty.
Yeah, so it's like weird, like what we as Angelenos will line up for versus what people in New York were lining up. But also in New York, I feel like there's so many more bakeries, and I feel like there's more of like a bakery pastry culture than there is in LA. Whereas here it's like I really want those cool sneakers and I really want that spicy chicken.
People have their
Yeah.
priorities in line here.
Yes, people have their priorities. Yes.
Well, Jen, this was so fun talking. I start every episode with like with the thing that you told me that you've got a taste, but now I'm curious, what was the last great thing that you tasted that you are excited about? Like something like recently that you tasted that was a you've got to taste this moment.
Ooh, I just had amazing food yesterday at CJ's Wings on
Okay.
Pico. It's this tiny little place you order at the counter, and there's like a couple seats outside, and they also have a food truck, and they make phenomenal chicken wings, and they put their boss sauce on it, which
Okay.
is like it on it's like on the heat scale, it's like a 6 out of 10. It is not buffalo, maybe buffalo adjacent, but it's more of like a vinegary chili sauce with a little bit of like sweet at the end. And the wings are lightly breaded and fried. So they're almost like Korean chicken, like remind me of Korean chicken wings in that way. And also the sauce is a little on the thicker side, but the wings, it doesn't like, the wings stay crispy.
Okay.
And they were just like exceptional chicken wings. And I love my, like, I love me a good chicken wing. So I would say that was the last best thing I
Yes.
ate, BJ's
Good
wings.
answer. Yeah, so when you
Yeah.
get wings like that, do you take them into your car and eat them, or do you just stand on the sidewalk, or you sit on the
We
stool?
sat on the sidewalk. There were two tables outside, and we just sat on the sidewalk and probably used every napkin they had in the restaurant.
Sure, yeah.
And my nose was running, and I was just
Oh,
like,
yeah.
this is very enjoyable. Wait, do you ever answer that question? I want to know
The last thing
what
I
I should
ate?
eat. Yeah.
Oh, wow. You're really turning the tables here. I feel so put on the spot. Well, it was so funny because you just said, talked about that. And I was just thinking, I went to Yangban Society.
Love Yangban. Yes. I love that
Yangban.
place.
Yeah.
Yes,
And
yes.
they had wings there that were so good. That sound kind of similar. They were sort of like shellacked in like a sauce, but then coated like in, I guess, breadcrumbs or flour and then fried so that it was like crispy on the outside. But then underneath the crispy layer was like the saucy layer.
That's so
And
good.
they were so good. So that's probably my answer because that's the first thing that came to mind.
That's a good answer. Those are
Thank
some
you.
very good wings. Yes,
All right.
agreed.
Well, we ended
Agree.
on a high note. Well, Jen, thanks so much. And I'm very excited for our matzo ball soup dumpling date. So we'll have to do that
Yes.
as a follow-up.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good rest of your day. Well, that's it for this week's episode of You've Gotta Taste This. Thanks to Jen Harris for sending me to eat some of the best soup dumpling bao I've ever had in my entire life. If you want to get some of the recipes from this podcast, I relaunched my blog recently, so head over to amateurgourmet.com and you'll get all of the recipes I've been talking about these previous episodes, including Noah Galutin's porcini rosemary tomato sauce, Nicole Rucker's pierogi with dried fruit and pork, and Felicity Spector's Ukrainian bread with a poppy seed paste and apples. And next week we have another amazing recipe, so tune in. You can follow me on Instagram at Amateur Gourmet, and I'm also on Twitter and TikTok. And I'll see you back here next week. Take care.